bang, bang.
Hello and welcome to Fang Bangers Podcast, where you always do this part. We're chaotic, horny friends rewatching the chaotic, horny HBO series True Blood. I'm Elise.
And I'm Lozzie. This week we're discussing Season 3, Episode 3, It Hurts Me Too. This episode originally aired on June 27th, 2010. It was written by Alexander Wu and directed by Michael Lehman.
Summary from Wiki. In search of Bill, Sookie heads to Jackson, Mississippi in the company of Alcide, a werewolf bodyguard assigned by Eric to protect her. Jason is distracted from his police exams. Bud reaches the end of his rope. Arlene copes with unexpected news. Franklin charms Tara and gets Jessica out of a jam. Eric bequeaths a gift to Lafayette. Haunted by visions from his past, Bill makes a surprising pledge of allegiance. This shit is bananas. B-A-N-A-N-A-S.
Well, see,
I felt
that is one song. The other song is Jackson, Mississippi. Gotta show up. Gotta kiss myself. So pretty.
Oh, I don't know that song.
You don't know Uptown Funk? That is a shame. And
I don't think I knew that was a lyric to that song.
Okay.
Perfect. I know the song. I've been to many a wedding. I feel like that's just one of those songs that gets played by like DJs Humble a brag. Lot. I haven't been to that many weddings. I just think that's like a DJ song.
Fuck.
For like those kind of parties.
Yep.
This was a little bit of a ridiculous episode.
Yeah, this whole season has had so many plot lines just running like in parallel. And like in classic True Blood style, no plot stays still for long. And kept going. We could talk about whether all of those plot lines are holding our attention or not, but lots of shit happening.
It made it almost hard for me to like organize the notes because I was like, everything is just like interwoven. I will say though that in addition to having all like the crazy plot stuff, I really enjoyed that we got to slow down and have a funeral for Eggs like in the middle of the episode. I thought it was really sweet of Sookie to pay for all of that, especially since like she and Tara are fighting, but like they're family, and I don't think, and like that scene is really sweet because she's like, why don't you come home? Like, you can still be mad at me, but, like, you should still be at home. And it's very clear that Tara wants that as well.
I really liked it. You're right. Like, it does seem a little out of place because of the breakneck speed of all the other plots. But we get told so much that Tara and Sookie are best friends. And we get, like, the episode when Tara's shouting at her and Lafayette's like, that's your best friend in the whole damn world, and we've not really got to see it properly, and this was absolutely the best example of it, so I really liked it. It was a really important beat, I think.
We keep getting told that they're best friends. It's nice to see like how that actually plays out when shit's not hit the fan, even though shit has always hitting the fan with these people. Just real quick on that, I did find it funny that when Mike Spencer called Tara to be like, oh, we're having the Tally funeral, Tara like didn't even know Eggs's surname. So that was kind of wild. Because everything in last season happened so quickly, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, and she was obviously under Marianne's influence for a lot of it. So
yeah, that's true. I also felt this episode had like a lot of really gross stuff in it. There's parts where I actually had to look away, like at the end with Lorena's head. I was like, oh no.
The Lorena's head. And then we had quite something.
it was brutal. I mean, I thought it was funny, but at the same time I was like, okay, like logistically this is disgusting.
It was very death becomes her.
I also get that headless body. Yeah. Which is, I haven't seen that, but like I'm familiar with.
You've seen the poster, like with Meryl Streep's head twisted around.
Yeah. I do also like that we got that headless body. Like, it reminded me of the TV show Bones and, like, how I would never watch that show, like, during dinner and stuff.
Yeah, that was Jessica's victim. And then you also get Franklin, like, yes, puppeting and doing a Muppet voice.
Oh, my God. That was... Yeah, I had, like, a bit on that later because I thought that was, like... Franklin is so unhinged.
Yeah.
I'm enjoying Franklin more than I had before. I just wish it wasn't related to Tara so much.
Yeah. More on that later. Yes. And then, yeah, Jason is just all over the place. He's absolutely all over the place. So.
Yeah. I don't think Jason really knows what's going on with him. Please get some therapy, baby. Mm-hmm. We had a couple things that happened in the episode that didn't really tie too much into the larger plot. Specifically with Arlene is pregnant, and the timeline means, they didn't come out and say this, but, like, it's pretty obvious that the baby's daddy is likely Renee. I do want to shout out that her OB is played by the actor who was the headmaster of the high school in Gilmore Girls. I don't remember that actor's name, but I was excited to see him. although it was weird that he called the baby a critter.
Yeah.
Like, you're a doctor.
You're having a possum.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm like, a possum or a possum? Like, they're... but yeah, so eventually, you know, Terry thinks that they're going to break up because Eileen, I don't know who Eileen is. Arlene's been, like, cagey. And, you know, he's like, you're going to be like, it's not you, it's me. And she was like, well, it actually is me. And then she finally tells him that she's having a baby. And he just... automatically assumes he's the father, which, like, I probably would also do that, but also it's funny, like, they've not been dating that long. Like, season two did not take place over that much time. So, like seasonally, I'm like, Renee didn't even occur to me until, like, I knew, but I had forgotten that it was his baby. So I was just very much like the characters, like, forgot Renee existed.
Yeah. I mean, it, to be fair, has been an entire season. So, like, it just goes to show how insanely compressed the timelines of True Blood seasons are. Like, season one takes place over basically 3 days. Season two seemingly takes place over, like, 3 weeks or something.
I do feel that Arlene probably should have told Terry the timeline, but
I think
I'm sure this is not the end of that conversation.
No, I'm sure it's not. You could see she's, you know, it's cowardice, but she's also been through a hell of a lot, so you can kind of understand.
Yeah,
it. But
I'm not like judging her or anything. I just feel very much.
It just
like,
feels so bad for Terry. Poor Terry.
Yeah, he's so excited. He was like hooting and hollering.
But yeah, to the earlier point, right, this is like the seventh plot line, and it involves someone finding out they're pregnant, that the baby is like their dead former vampire killing murderer's lovers.
And then lying to someone about it. In any other show, like, that would be like the main plot of this episode.
I know, it's crazy.
And it's like the least important plot so far. We also get a little bit of Lafayette, like, not being able to really get out of Eric's business interests. Eric brings him that fancy car and basically is blackmailing him to, like, I don't know if it's a blackmail, but, like, I feel like it is from a vampire because they could just, like, hurt you if you don't go along with what they're saying.
I think he's playing good Eric's cop, bad just, cop. I think he's getting panned
Eric's
to be
like,
bad
you're
cop.
The best.
Yeah.
That's totally fair. Yeah, because he first says, like, Pam's been a little harsh lately.
Yeah.
And he basically, I did really enjoy the, like, obviously I have to sell it to you for a dollar so I don't have to deal with that pesky gift tax. And I'm like, I know all about that. It's so funny. but yeah, it's like easier to just like sell somebody something. I think people do that with houses as well when they like give them to their family members. Like it's just cheap. Like it's a better business decision to like sell it to them for a dollar.
Yeah, I think that's also a good way that fraud occurs. So I'm not sure it's a full full separation, but I'm sure they have ways of just like putting, you know, old car a dollar or something and no one looks into it. But yeah, it's interesting how Eric is buttering him up, being like, you know, you're my best salesman, you're discreet, you've got a great network of high value customers, here's a car.
Yeah,
when he had Pam like, you know, crunching down on him at the so yeah, it definitely feels like they're playing Lafayette, and I can't remember for what purpose other than continued sales.
I don't remember either. But I also feel like there's a lot of things happening probably behind the scenes where Eric has to, like, do things a certain way so that the Magister doesn't get, like, his heckles up. And, like, and part of that is why I think he can't go with Sookie as well, is because he's, like, has stuff to work on with that.
Yeah, I mean, in the last episode, you had Sophie Anne had him up by the throat saying, sell the V now. I need the money. The IRS is on my ass. So, like, that's his priority.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Jason wants to be a police officer.
Oh my god. Of course you do, Jason.
Jason cannot, like, I feel like every season Jason wants to, like, do something different. Like, season one, he's like, I'm gonna fuck all these girls. Season two, he's like, I'm gonna follow Jesus. And now he's like, I'm gonna be a cop. Although, I do think it's, and you mentioned this in the notes, and I totally agree. I was laughing hysterically when he's like, it's not just about, like, I don't know how he phrased it, but he basically says, like, it's not just about beating people up. There's, like, paramilitary training, and I have that.
Yeah.
I feel like him saying paramilitary training needs to turn into a drinking game. That's basically what I was trying to say.
I think so. He's, we can all have our nominated spirit of choice. We can take a shot from that tray of drinks that Sam confiscates later. But Jason continuing going on about that he's had paramilitary training, and it's like, I'm not sure that's true, Jason. You jumped over a fence and you shot a machine guns and you learnt about wooden bullets, right? Like, I think you're a little bit deluded. Also, like, I am sure if Jason wanted to be a policeman, they would find a way for it to happen. But there is no one worse at this. Like, there would be no one more capricious, more, less obedient to the rule of law, more likely to get himself in shit than Jason Stackhouse.
Yeah, for sure. But I just, it just reminded me of something I want to say later.
Also, as you sort of mentioned in the intro, like, he needs therapy and he's terrified about guns. He keeps having flashbacks.
He keeps seeing the bullet holes in people's foreheads. And like, he really just... It's just really bad. He has that dream where he's, like, taking the exam to be a police officer. And, like, this is a dream I feel like we have all had. The paper turns into, like, what looks like another language. And you're just like, I don't know how to take this test. Like, I can't. So he gets up and asks for a new test. And then, like... You know, Bud Dearborn is, like, the proctor, and he has the bullet hole in his head, and then he, like, looks at Jason and is like, where are your pants? Like, so Jason can't take the test because it's in another language, or it looks like
it's hieroglyphics, actually. It was like...
Yeah, exactly. It's, and like, then
I'm sure there was a font on a Windows 98 PC which was in hieroglyphics or something.
I think it's called, like, Windigs or something. Windigs, one of those.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah.
Yeah, and God, I used to hate those dreams though, when you weren't prepared and then you were naked, like in front of everyone, and not in a fun way. Sounds awful.
Yeah, he's also talking to Hoyt. Hoyt basically, like, he gets 22 in a row. Well,
yeah,
Hoyt's Hoyt's just like, okay, yeah, well, can we talk about my shit now? Because you are not good at this. And Jason has this incredible line, which is like, I've heard every breakup excuse from your son of a bitch, Stackhouse, to you're a fucking asshole, Jason. And you know what? They're all the same thing. And technically, that is right. They are the same thing. All the ones he hears are exactly the same thing. Which is that
I'm not sure, like, what
prick.
His point was, though.
His point,
like,
was,
what was his point, though?
Well, his point then was, the truth is, they couldn't handle the heat he was packing, which is why every girlfriend he had was hotter than the last one. Jesus. And it's like,
oh, he's just giving you. Hoyt the worst advice.
Yeah, which I, at least Hoyt appreciates that it's terrible advice, but Jesus.
Yeah, I feel like Hoyt is like needs to learn that while Jason's a fun time, he is definitely not someone you go to talk to about like girls.
Yeah. And Jason then, because he had a bad dream, he then falls asleep in his car when they're at work, and Lafayette has to wake him up to get him to sign something, and Jason's like,
because he's supposed to be supervising them. He's taking a nap.
Jason's like, I know what you're thinking, but I've got a lot on my mind recently. And Lafayette's cold burn of that must feel new was spectacular. Good job,
Lafayette. Yeah, Lafayette is the best. Yes. Everything he says makes me laugh. I'm so glad that he's here.
Yes, he's great.
Hoyt finds that dead body that we mentioned earlier, which is, we learned later that it's Jessica's dead body. I really enjoyed that bit because it was gross and it just, like, made me think of, like, a forensic show in a fun way. And I really liked when Andy was, like, saying some forensic shit. I was like, oh, he seems to know what he's talking about. Although Kenya was, like, looking at him like, shut the fuck up.
She was giving him side eye. He was, like, showing off a bit. But it
yeah, like, they should have waited like for Mike Spencer, also for sure.
Sober, which is not something you can always say about Andy Belfour. And, like, taking
yeah,
it seriously.
That's true.
And, like, I feel
she's
like
she's probably not used to that lately.
Yeah. So, I mean, it was good. Anyway, Bud absolutely just goes, I've had it. Basically starts
I've quit.
Takes off all of his accoutrements and just chucks them on the floor and says,
yeah,
I'm done.
She's like, I need you to sign this. He's like, you sign it. I don't care. I don't remember what happens with that, but like, I do. I had forgotten that he quits until it had happened. He's just like, I've had enough. So I wanted to talk a little bit about one of our new characters, Franklin.
Yes.
Played by James Frayne. Obviously, I wasn't on the episode where you and Melissa like talked about him a little bit. But like, he's so good at playing a creep.
He is creepy, slightly thinner Rufus Sewell, basically. Like, he's TV Rufus Sewell.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I also feel like Rufus Sewell is TV Rufus Sewell, but that's just my opinion.
They just, like, when they turn up, you know that they are bad guys, like, in everything.
Oh, yeah. I feel like that is very true of both of them. He's clearly on the hunt for info on Bill, but we do not know why. Like, I don't remember how this ties into the larger plot, which is very cool because I like being surprised. And it's been a long time since I've watched season 3. But I want to just call something out. This is something we've mentioned before. This show does not really do our black characters very well. And while I'm super happy that Tara looks like she got some really great orgasms, this quickly turns into a situation where she's not making her own decisions. And like, he glamors her, and I mean, their first interaction seems very much like she wanted to be there. And then he starts to prod her about her life, and she's like, nope, we're not getting into that, and she leaves. And then after he had kind of gotten information out of Jessica, which I feel bad for Jessica because she, like, had this dead body that is gone, and clearly he is involved with this. He uses it to get all this information. So he finds out Tara's name and, like, goes back to her house because she's at Sookie's. And it just... Tara's been through enough. Like, let her have a break, please. And now she's just going to be under the influence of this vampire.
Yeah. It's very rough. It's very rough, as you say, like... The black characters just don't get a win. Like, I know it's a show where everyone gets shit happening to them all the time.
Yeah, but
there's just seemingly
I really like how you put that before. Mm-hmm.
There's seemingly no relief for Tara. Lafayette gets a car, at least, I guess. with a lot of strings attached. Even if they're not, like, explicitly called out. Yeah, Tara just seems to go... You know, this was the same episode where she was going to X's funeral, right? Like, it's... And immediately after, like, having a one-night stand, going to X's funeral, and then she's just straight back into being manipulated, being under the influence, and, And she, like, the first two episodes of the season was more Letty Mae bullshit, right? Like, she's just relentless.
Yeah.
And it's rough to watch.
I know, the episode opens with her, like, having a great orgasm, basically, and you're just like, oh, this is great. But, like, you know it's not going to continue being great.
And even then, it's still quite creepy. There's undertone, just because it's James Frain.
Right? Oh, yeah. There's always undertones. Yeah, especially when she is like, oh, please, you know, bite me. And he was like, no. And she was like, why? And he was like, because you want me to. Like, that. There's a lot of things happening under the surface with that. Which, like, is gross.
Yeah, like, the nicest moment we've had for her in half a season is... Sookie and her being friends, but it was at X's funeral. Like, that's it.
Yeah, that's awful. I did really enjoy when he was being a super creep with the dead guy's head, making him talk to Jessica, basically. Like, this is a man that is unfucking hinged. And I just imagine that he, like, used, like, we don't know, but I feel like he probably threatened her, like, I'll expose you as the person that killed this person if you don't give me all the information that I want.
And Jessica's, says, like, 12, right? Like, or 18, right? And, like,
yeah,
she's
exactly.
Very young. She's being abandoned by, well, not necessarily abandoned by Bill, but Bill's not there. Sookie's not there.
And Pam's barely there.
Pam's doesn't care about her because she's got other...
although I did like when she called Pam. She was like explaining who she was. I don't know if it was that this episode or that was last episode.
Jessica Hamby? It's kind of like the way that her and Hoyt like, spoke to each other. No, it was this episode. It was the beginning of it. Like, she's like, it's Jessica Hamby. We spoke the other day about a dead body. And
And Pam's I know who you are. Or like, I'm familiar, whatever she says.
I'm familiar with really your byline.
I'm like, if I was Jessica calling up Pam, like, I would probably be like, the same, because, like, you don't know how many people Pam knows. Like, she's been around a long time. It's just very much, like, really funny.
But yeah, James Frain is very, very creepy. he gets the information out of Jessica, more about Bill. Basically, all we know about him is that he wants information on Bill. I think that one of the things this show does very well, is really maintain the sort of old malevolence of all of its, like, villain or all of its vampire characters. I think in shows like Buffy and Angel and a bunch of other sort of vampire shows that are perhaps pitched slightly younger, more YA, like the sort of twilightification of things, you tend to get this more like, oh, they're sparkly vampires, they're all just nice and good guys, and you know, and Bill's a nice guy, and Eric is a bad boy, but he's really just a nice guy, much like in the Angel.
Yeah, like Eric dynamic. Is very anti-hero-ish.
Yeah, so I love that you still get the malevolence of Russell Edgington and James Frain, or Franklin, I should call him.
Yeah.
And Lorena, and like, well, even Lorena is like, she's sort of a bit more of a comedy role.
Yeah. I have more to say on her when we get to the section on Bill, but I agree with you. I really like that it's much more nuanced as well. Like, there's, you know, people are good sometimes and not good other times, and that we also don't know Russell's, like, we don't know his goals yet, so that's also just interesting. Yeah. So I enjoy learning on whether these vampires are actually good or bad, or in the middle somewhere.
Yeah, and I think
Franklin seems a little, like, bad off the start. Yeah.
Bad. Russell's is much more like the malevolence is a different distance from the surface, right? Like, I think Sophie Ann's is closer to the surface than Russell's, and Franklin's is right up there, and Eric's and Bill's is a little bit further down, but they can be triggered quite easily as well. So I think it's really interesting comparing the age of the vampires, their sort of position in hierarchy.
Yeah, which we sort of really, I kind of wonder how old Franklin is.
Yeah, he feels like a much younger vampire to me.
Yeah, I agree. Looking forward to seeing where that goes in the within the larger scheme of things. Though, as I said, wish Tara was not part of it.
Yes.
So after Sam's brother tries to get him killed last episode, he comes back into the house to kind of say goodbye, and obviously to be like, what the fuck, to his brother. I have to just say, I hate these people. I'm like, not interested in it. It's kind of like, I feel about them how you feel about Letty Mae, kind of. If I have to see Jolie in his fucking dirty ass underwear one more time, I'm gonna be really upset.
Yeah, it was, so wouldn't have heard the last episode yet, but I basically said in it, I don't care about Sam's white trash family. Congratulations on my caring about you for like two episodes, Sam. I'm back to not caring.
Yeah, I agree. The only one I'm actually somewhat interested in is his mom, and that's only because, as I am sure Melissa told you, that is an actor that we love, who is in Succession, and I think she's the best actor of the three of them too. Like,
it's not close. Yeah,
like, she's the best actor, and she pulls the manipulation card really well with Sam.
I mean, like,
she makes Sam feels like he owes them, even though he doesn't owe them shit.
I think when they turn up at his bar, like, just the vibes and the, like, tent, like, you just up, right? You're like, oh, shit.
I'm like, what? Yeah, like, these people are not going to leave Sam alone now, is kind of, like, how I felt. He says, like, you know, he confronts them about it, too, which I appreciate. Sam's like, I thought we were going to have some time before we got together again. And they're like, well, we wanted to see, you know, how you live. And it's so it's so presumptuous, and it's just so... what's the word?
It's playing on his hospitality because she knows that he won't refuse it. She knows he won't be rude to them in public.
Intrusive.
She knows this is very intrusive.
Yeah.
But she's doing it deliberately, right? She's clearly setting this up.
Yeah, it's not clear. I mean, we know because we've watched the whole episode, but Sam doesn't realize, like, they're there because they basically want to, like, steal from him and rob him and take advantage of the fact that he has this successful business. He says, like, I'll buy you lunch, and then, like, they're there for the whole fucking day, and, like, it's towards the end of the day, and they're still ordering, like, that tray of shots for three people, or especially since the mom was, like, drinking a different cocktail, which actually looked really good. and I, like... There's
16 shots on there, and they're like,
for two people. I'm like,
that was nuts.
I mean, I don't know what liquor it was. Some of it looked like liqueurs that might not have as much alcohol in them, but they were drunk.
Yeah.
I just like got nauseous even looking at all of that. Like, this would not be fun. Like, that's enough shots for 16 people, or maybe 8 people.
Yeah, and also, like, you're kind of like Tara. I found it weird that Tara served them and didn't just like go, Sam, what's going on here? Like, that kid is young.
Yeah, I kind of feel like maybe Sam had said to her, like, get them whatever they want.
Yeah, maybe.
As like, I feel like that's something Sam would say, like, even if he didn't think that they would go excessive with it. And I kind of laughed at when, what's the brother's name? I don't remember.
Honestly, I'm sure I've been told it like 3 times now, and I don't remember that, and I don't really care.
So like, he's Sam sees that they're feeding, feeding his brother
name is
like
little
shots
shit.
And stuff. Okay, little shot, whatever. Little shit's getting served shots. It's like a tongue twister. And, like, Sam's like, this is not okay. Like, he's underage. I could lose my liquor license, which is 100% true. And Jolie goes, he'll be 20 next month. What's the difference? The legal age is 21. It's not even 20. Like, what are you talking about?
I mean, I feel like...
And I double-checked this in Louisiana just to make sure.
I feel like Malotz does not really stress too much about legal drinking ages most of the time, unless you're being completely taking the piss, which is what this is. Right?
That's probably true. And I also feel like if Sam doesn't know, that's one thing, but he knows.
Yeah. Well, I am 100% sure, like, families bring kids in to have a drink. And, like, obviously, in Europe, all the drinking ages are lower, so it's weird to me that it's 21 anyway, but like,
I do think I was reading up online, and I think in Louisiana, like, if you're in your own house, I think it's a little bit different.
Sure.
But like, and I think that varies from state to state, although most places it is 21. In New Jersey, it was 18 or 19 at one point, and when my mom was growing up, it was 18 in New York, so my mom was able to drink at 18. It just like,
so they raised it to 21.
Yeah,
weird ass country you got there, Elise.
Yeah,
you can fix that, right?
Yeah, there's our country shows all the promise in the world, I'm sure.
Yeah, mine's perfect as well. We're all fine.
they're all countries are perfect. I couldn't tell, like, because at the end of the episode or the end of like this, after Sam sends them home or whatever. Which I feel like, I guess the mom drank less, but like probably none of them should be driving, even though supposedly she was going to be driving. I'm sure that their plan was to just like sleep in their car.
Mm.
But there's an alarm that goes off that someone's like broken into Merlot's, and when he gets there, it didn't look like they had actually broken into the safe yet.
No, I don't think so. I think
all
the
bags got left there, and he just like left. The brother left as a bird.
I think it was just his brother. I don't think it was. I mean, I presume Jolie would have been know, incoherent at that point anyway. I think it was just his brother. I think the question is just like, was his brother acting on his own? I think he broke into the office and rifled through it, but the safe seemed closed and locked. So, and I can't, like,
yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if the parents or at least Jolie knew about this, but I don't remember what the story
well,
is.
Well, I was thinking more like it feels like his mother told him, might more likely told him to do that. But again, I may be remembering things and I may not be. I'm not, well, I don't think we certainly right. don't know at this point. All we know is it was his brother because it's,
yeah. I mean, Sam knows it was his brother too. Yeah. He seems pretty pissed. I mean, who else would like leave as a bird? Like, that doesn't make sense for it to be anyone else. But yeah, I basically agree with you. I don't care about Sam's white trash family either. I would be fine. I mean, I really like, I'm starting to like Sam, like, in general. I just don't care about this family. And they're very, I don't enjoy storylines where, like, there's, like, hangers-on. Like, I feel the same way about in season one of the OC with Oliver, that guy who, like, fixates on Marissa. I just, like, that was not interesting to me. Like, I don't care.
Yeah, it's...
Which might be where we get with Franklin as well. I don't remember where that goes.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just... Sam and Sookie have a nice moment in this episode as well. And it's nice because it feels like they're actually just being kind of normal to each other. And Sam isn't trying to, like, be resentful or trying to manipulate something. So I did like that. But I can't... I struggle to deal with the fact that I think Sam has improved, and I think he genuinely as a character grew through season two with the fact that he's now saddled with this absolute, you know, load weight around his neck, which is this storyline for the season, which I'm like, yeah, but they're trash. Why? What are you doing? Like, honestly,
I would much rather have a storyline with Sam that involved like shapeshifters or something like that.
Yeah. Which
I mean, like, non-related
technically
ones.
We have, but like, yeah.
I know that this, like, you know, his brother is a shapeshifter, and I guess they said his mom was as well.
Yeah, it comes from his mom.
I'm more interested in that stuff than like the family stuff for him.
Yeah. Agreed. All right.
You want to move on to Bill?
Bill.
Sorry, Vampire Bill.
Vampire Bill.
I did. I have to say, I was loving that last episode. Sookie got to, like, impersonate him a little.
It was incredible.
No, I wasn't here for that.
Sookie.
So Bill is at Russell and Talbot still, dressed real fancy. I'm obsessed with Talbot, like, as a person. I guess he's not really a person. He's a vampire. But, like, he is such a dramatic queen, and... The way that he's upset about his rug, I loved his and Russell's dynamic. Like, he is just, like, the whiny baby of the relationship, and Russell just, like, loves him so much, but also is like, you're a ridiculous person.
Russell is the daddy, I think, is very clear.
Yeah. Oh, 100%. I mean, he's also the king. Like, he's going to be the daddy. So, Bill's just in this very slippery situation because... He finds out that the whole point of this was that Lorena once, like, to kill Sookie, and that Sookie, like, in front of him. like, Lorena wanted Russell to, like, let Bill watch her kill Sookie. And, like, I really enjoyed that Russell's, like, Lorena's not that sophisticated, is she?
She's still bitter about that. Like, Lorena's an interesting character because...
It's like shit that's happened 80 years ago. Like, come on. Yeah.
Well, I think she's just obsessed with Bill, right? She's still obsessed with Bill. I think possibly because the reason she turned him in the first place, right, was like he was the... only soldier who turned up who didn't try and take advantage of her, and she's basically just still fixated on that same thing. She's utterly in what she would describe as love with Bill, and she says so whilst having her neck twisted and being hate fucked at the end of the episode.
I'm like, is he taking advantage of you now, girl? Like, what?
No, but she's like, it's this weird relationship between them where he hates her, and she, because of what she took from him, what he perceives that she took from him, well, mostly what she did actually take from him, which is his humanity, his life. And she just is obsessed with him. And it's a really interesting dynamic. I don't know that I've seen a dynamic like this in almost anything else that I can think of, where she has, to a reasonable extent, the power over him because she's his maker and because she's older than him and because she's got like these relationships with the King of Mississippi, etc. But she's so one-track mind and so unsophisticated, to use Russell's words, about how she goes around. And Bill is just like trying to go away, trying to leave her and not being allowed to.
Yeah. I think it's interesting that Russell sees that too. Like, he realizes, he says to Bill, and I take him at his word, like, he'd rather do business with Bill than Lorena. Like,
well, I mean, and he literally does, right? He breaks his word to Lorena because he gave his word to Bill. He's like, one of you matters and the other one does not, basically.
Yeah, I think he realizes that, like, you know, Bill has political standing as well because he is regarded well by Sophie Anne, or at least, like, to the out, you know, I'm sure, like, there's stuff between them, and, like, he, you know, every state probably has, like, their own secrets, but, like, he sees that, that Bill can also control himself in ways that is important. You don't want someone who's, like a loose cannon, I guess, like, working for you necessarily. And I think that him telling Bill that how Lorena's plan was that Sookie would die, like, really is what made Bill make this decision to pledge loyalty to Russell, because he's like, I mean, I think that there's a couple of things happening here. We get all the flashbacks with Bill going back to his wife and that not going very well, and Lorena being like, see, you can't be around humans, blah 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 blah. But I think that those scenes are trying to kind of trick us into making us think that that Bill's really like, okay, I am done with humanity, like, this might not work out for me, but I think the truth is that he knows this is the safest way for Sookie not to get hurt.
Yeah, I agree, and I think that Lorena knows that Bill basically lies when he pledges allegiance. He's like doing what, or maybe he doesn't lie, but like is not doing it because he actually cares about Russell versus Sophie Anne. I think he's doing it so that, because he remembers what happened to his wife, to, was it Caroline?
Yeah.
And so he, you know,
Lindsay from the OC season 2.
He
Ryan's like girlfriend for 2 minutes.
Right. I've forgotten her. Wait, what? Who was the other girl that Ryan like sort of dated? Who was like ran the bar or the club or something? Wasn't that in? She was more famous. So anyway, that is not relevant. This is not an OC podcast, but. Except when it is.
All I know is that Lindsay ended up being Caleb's daughter.
Incredible.
It was like, there was like a whole hidden thing. Spoiler.
Second, for the OC. Look, if Melissa's not here to talk about New Girl, then we can talk about the OC.
Exactly.
But yeah, I think, I really like those flashbacks because I think it really, really shows you, again, back to our show, Don't Tell, it really shows you how much Bill resents what Lorena has caused, which is his death, his loss of his family, his, you know, his son is basically in a coffin after smallpox, I think it's supposed to be in this, the fact that he has to bury him, and the fact that his wife will reject him because she knows he's, you know, he's not human.
Yeah, she seemed horrified by him.
She was horrified by him, which she would be, you know, fair enough. But because he's crying blood tears. Anyway, so he decides that he's going to pledge to Russell, give up on Sophie Anne. Lorena, Russell then goes, okay, well, we don't actually need Sookie then, that's fine, and calls Cooter off, again, Cooter, ridiculous fucking name, calls Cooter off of the hunt for Sookie, and or at least he calls him off in front of Bill. We'll see whether he actually does that or not in future.
Right.
And then Lorena follows Bill into his room.
Yeah. And then we get to the cliffhanger, I guess.
Yep.
It wasn't much of a cliffhanger, really, because it was more just like, let's end on a crazy note. I guess I feel like if it was anyone besides Lorena, like, this would be rape. I don't know, like,
yeah, it's not, because Lorena, I mean,
definitely loves it.
Loves it.
Apparently.
But yes, it's certainly.
But I did enjoy that he couldn't look at her face and, like, had to turn it around.
The fact that he literally twists her neck around is hilarious. Like, properly weird body comedy horror.
Yeah.
I think, like, if it was just, like, hate sex, I would have this really, really low on the cliffhanger list. But the fact that he twists her head around, I think, has to give us a few
and
bonus
then
points.
Cries hysterically and about then cries it. Like, it's the crying that adds it to me, because I think he literally hates himself in that moment. Like,
he definitely, like, does. Yeah.
Realizing what he did. Yeah. I mean, like, I don't think Sookie would be too happy about this.
No, I don't think Sookie would be too happy about it. So where do we think, just so we've got our cliffhanger list, we've got 26 cliffhangers ranked. Number one is Grant is dead, and number 26 is Godric rescues Sookie, which is like the third best cliffhanger in that episode. So
I think that this is like a high up one, because it's like fucking bananas to me. Like in middle to high.
Yes. So do we, okay, so I can see, like, we've got at 7, we've got Daphne puts the bull head on Marianne, and at 8, we've got Barry is also a telepath. Are you thinking in between there, or lower down, or higher up?
I think maybe right before Dawn is dead.
Okay.
Which is right under Barry is also a telepath, because I feel like it's, like, a big deal, but it's also just, like, the one of the insane, funnier endings we've had.
Do
you want to edit that?
I am completely down with that. That works.
I love it.
So our new number 9 is episode 303. Death becomes hate fucking.
And it's right above Dawn is dead, and right under Barry is also a telepath.
Yes. Which we also ranked season 2 of us. There you go.
Oh, good job.
Great job. Okay, so we have one more left then.
Yes. Speaking of Sookie not liking, wouldn't like that, then the last bit of this episode is about Sookie. We start with Eric is helping her with that werewolf that's in her house. He kills him. They kill him pretty quickly, like, after he drinks Eric's blood. The only thing Sookie was able to hear from him was Jackson, which of course Sookie thinks is a person, and Eric's just like, no, that's where he's from. Don't you all hear, like, different accents? I would imagine if you are a vampire and you've been around for a long time, you could probably be like, oh, you're from that neighborhood.
To be fair, I think the thing he thinks is something like, Jackson's going to be upset. And it is, I think, in the framing of the way he thinks that and Sookie hears it, it is more like a person rather than it's a weird thing to think of.
Yeah,
like,
it feels deliberately obtuse.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think because I knew that it meant, like, Mississippi, that I just probably had that bias going into. I don't want to forget this. After they killed that guy, Eric goes, I got your rug all wet. And I'm like, that is like a euphemism if I ever heard one.
Yes. I think all Eric Suki interactions need to include Eric using some ridiculous euphemism. It's definitely on our list for the season. It's not quite as good as I hear the water in Arkansas is hard. So,
which actually is really funny because I think both AJ and Jules were watching that episode this weekend, and those are our friends, by the way. And they both like laughed their asses off at that bit,
which they should do because it's incredible.
Yes. I do think this is an interesting bit of vulnerability we get from Eric. He admits to Suki that if a werewolf has had vampire blood, like, they are going to be a challenge to overtake. And Eric is saying, like, you know, it's even a challenge for me. And I think that that's not something that Eric 2 seasons ago would have admitted to Suki.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting also that Eric then like is digging a shallow grave in the graveyard, and I'm like, I feel like Eric would be digging faster than this. I think he would be like zooping and like going
Yeah, that's so. Probably true, but I also think he said it was a fresh grave, so like there probably wasn't that much to like dig up.
Yeah, maybe. Anyway, so so Suki
asks Sam for time off of work as she as she does,
and this time, like, Sam is like, "Okay, we've been through this before. I know it's going to happen. So let me just accept. Yeah. Like, God, give me the strength to accept the things I cannot change."
Well, he also sees the ring on her finger, and he's like, "Nice ring." Like, I think it's funny that Suki's wearing the ring, even though she never got to say like yes to Bill.
She got given the ring, so.
No, I know. I just, you know, he's fucked Lorena. I mean, I guess he didn't at that point. Yeah, I enjoy Suki and Sam now when I didn't previous. Mm. Like, I think the more that he's not trying to get with her, the better things are. When they're definitely boss and employee or just actual friends, I actually enjoy them.
Yeah, he's also, because of the events of last season, which forced him to confront and be himself more, I think he is much more relaxed with his friends and employees and the general Bontemps people, because they know who he is and he knows who he is. So
yeah,
I
mean, he even says that comment earlier, like, when he tells her, like, oh, you know, I have a, like, it's off screen, but they come into the scene and she's like, you have a brother? So he actually told her like what's been going on. And the first thing he says is like, I get on with the people here better than like these people. The people in Bontemps are like my people.
Yeah.
Not my white trash family.
Yeah.
Which makes complete sense to me.
Yeah. 100%.
Eric sends Alcide, who is someone that we're meeting for the first time, to help Suki in her quest to go to Jackson and find Bill. He is a werewolf as well. His dad owes Eric money from a loan, which, you know, don't take loans from Eric. And this is part of his repayment because he doesn't want his dad's business to go under.
Yes, it should be noted that Alcide is Joe Manganiello, and he is a big old hunker burning man.
He is not doing the best acting in this, and he's doing even worse accent work, but he's so hot that I don't really
care. I think Joe Manganiello is there to act. I think he's there to look.
Yeah, that's beefy. True. He's like from like the Northeast, I think, so that's why I was like,
right.
Let me see. He's from... Yeah, he's like born in Pittsburgh. So I was just saying, whenever we get like a new character that like is doing an accent or whatever, I have to look at where they're from to know, like. And
yes, James Frayne is fortunately getting to do an English accent rather than
yes. I will say that I think Alcide's accent is better than Daniel Craig's in Lara Croft Tomb Raider, which we watched yesterday. So that has something going for it. So Alcide's gonna also know a lot about the werewolf community back in Jackson. Apparently his ex is there dating a Cooter.
And he finds out later that they're actually engaged as well. So,
which is funny because the bounce, because so basically, after the funeral for Eggs, Suki and Alcide leave to go to Jackson, and he takes her to this like wear bar. And so he starts a fight with this guy who like obviously is trying to take advantage of Suki. And the bouncer assumes it's because Debbie is with Cooter and they're getting engaged. But, like, the bouncer is the one who told Alcide this information. Like, he did not know that prior. But yeah, there's a whole... gets to do her...
Sorry. I was just going to say there's a whole, like, new werewolf, old werewolf pack thing going on in
Yeah, it in seems Jackson. Like the Nazi werewolves... have, like, come to that area to take... We'll just call them the Nazi werewolves, honestly. Yep. They've, like, come to take over, and, like, those are the ones that are, like, working for Russell Edgington. So, Suki gets to do her best, like, go to the bar and trick people into thinking about the thing she needs info on. She's done this at Fantasia, you know. We've seen that when she was looking for information on who is killing her coworkers in season one.
She also does her classic Suki Stackhouse. I'm just going to go into this situation and assuming that I can get out of it.
That is very true.
Who's going to attack me?
Yeah. And,
unfortunately, the world keeps rewarding Suki for that because Alcide does come in and rescue
her. And there is that one point earlier in the episode where she says to Eric, like, if I'm in pain or if I'm like in danger, you'll feel it, right? So she just like feels like she has all these like guardian angels around her.
Yeah.
Did you catch when she was asking that guy like about where we could find a vampire? He goes, what, like for like a three-way sort of deal? Yep.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, this guy's open to it.
Yeah, fair play, bisexual vampire. It's a diversity win.
I was very excited about that.
The bar is also called Lupines, which, you know, spectacular, you know, JK Rowling levels of nicknames and naming conventions there.
Fuck her.
Yep, fuck her.
I don't really remember if they get that much information from these people.
They find out that guy definitely abducted Bill, so they know that. I don't think they find out more. I think they know that he's part of Cooter's pack, and Alcide then finds out that Debbie is engaged to Cooter, and I think that's pretty much where we leave them.
So at least they know like which people to further investigate.
It's another thread.
So we already ranked that cliffhanger, but did you have anything else to discuss before we get into some of our regular segments?
Not enough Pam. More Pam, please. Always more Pam.
Yeah, Pam has one really great scene in this, which I will discuss very shortly. I do kind of want to get into some of the differences. I know this normally is saved for like the book spoilers section, but I kind of wanted to talk about Alcide a little bit.
Right.
Because there are a couple differences between Alcide in the book and Alcide in the show, and I get why they made the changes. In the book, Alcide's dad owes the vampires money because the vampires also own casinos. And so it's like a gambling debt. I feel like that doesn't need to be explained in a book, but you might have to like show another set if you had that in a television program. We do get a lot of were lore from Alcide in the book as well. Like, he goes on to explain to Suki that the only way to like have a were baby is with two were parents, and he says that each couple usually only gets one, like you wouldn't have a second were baby. Right. And it starts to show at puberty. And he also, in the book, his ex is named Debbie still, but, like, she's a shifter. She's not aware. And she's not, I don't think she's, like, with the Nazi group. Okay. And he had only,
I don't know that we know she's a werewolf here, do we? She could still be a shifter.
Oh, I think I just assumed because these people seem like they are racist against other groups. Not Elseed, but like the Nazi werewolves. Like, I just feel like they like wouldn't date. I just get the impression they wouldn't date a non-were person. I mean, I don't think that means they wouldn't fuck one, but date, if they wouldn't get like engaged. I get that vibe. I may be wrong.
Gotcha. Got it.
And he said he only dated Debbie really because, I mean, obviously he liked her, but like he doesn't want to pass a werewolf like gene onto someone. And Debbie said that she was sterile, but that apparently wasn't true. And if a were and a shifter have a baby, they might be a shifter too, the baby, but they wouldn't be able to control when they shift, which is different from what we've learned about Sam in the show. Like, this is book lore. They would just like shift at the full moon. So like technically, because they, so they'd get somewhere like the full moon part of like the werewolf and then the shifting of the shifter, but like it was, it doesn't make sense within the show's logic. So anyway, I just thought that was kind of
That's cool. That's interesting lore. All right. Yeah. So, should we move on to what's the most chaotic? I think we've very much in line on both our chaotic and horny choices.
Yeah. This episode. It's definitely Bill hate fucking Lorena.
Like, I don't think we've been as super clear about this. Bill twists her head around so he doesn't have to look
completely
at her.
180 degrees.
Like, not just flips the body over. Like, not just his ducky
song. Yeah, she's still tits still, up.
Yeah, but her head is facing down. It's just a remarkable piece of television.
Like, he could have easily just flipped her around and done it doggy style, but no, he had to be like, I'm not changing this. I'm just going to fucking fuck Roll your in. Head up.
Yep.
Complete chaos.
Yep.
All ending with a I hate myself cry.
Yes. Yeah. Good job, Bill.
For most
chaotic.
Yeah, definitely. Which is, I feel like maybe the first and last time he'll get that.
He'll get that, yeah. And I was just thinking, we should also note Jason's pretty fucking chaotic this episode, but it's Jason,
he
so he's
he,
always...
He, like, lights the fucking deputy form on fire when he, like, for, over his stove, like a drama queen.
It's such a drama queen, yeah.
I know. And for most horny, I think we might also be in agreement. Pam for the Estonian dancer. Although I would say that when Pam answers the phone to Jessica, I don't find that Pam's lipstick is messy enough. Her face should be a mess.
Yeah, she does tell her to lie back and think of Estonia.
Think of Estonia. That's so funny.
And yes, when Jessica's on the phone, she's like, spit it out, cupcake, I'm in the middle of something. Like, yes, you are.
Yes.
I mean, the other scenes that we have are A, the most chaotic one we just mentioned, and then B, there's the Franklin and Tara stuff, but that's sort of creepy, not horny.
It was horny if it was just the beginning part, but like as soon as he started poking around and her like needing to know more about her like in a creepy way, I was like, no, this isn't horny anymore.
Yeah. All right.
So I do have like a couple more book things and one spoiler. And so if you have spoiler feelings, maybe fast forward a little bit or we'll see you next time. Jason does become a police officer, I think, in this show.
If he does, I have no recollection of that.
I recall him being a werepanther, but like... Yeah, well, he met the where the he saw when he went on the drive with Andy in the premiere. You know, they saw the werepanther girl.
That we don't know is a werepanther yet. in the show.
Yeah, exactly. But I am pretty sure that he becomes a police officer. So that's like, I'm curious how we get from where we are now to that. There's a section of the book where like Alcide is trying to guess like how Sookie can help find Bill, like what her special set of skills is, if we're going to take a quote from the movie Taken. And then like he's kind of like guessing all these things, and then at one point he goes, "You're not a man, are you?" And it's just fucking weird and out of place and transphobic. Mm-hmm. And I just like couldn't imagine, like, even if the answer was like, "Yes, I am a man," like how would that have changed anything for like finding Bill? It was just like a weird comment that I'm like, why is this here? And then lastly, I will say that this is the first book where Sookie actually says, like, my friend Tara. Like, right. Tara owns that store, Tara's Togs, which I think I've mentioned before. And Bill owns, like, the building that store is in, like, in the book. And this is, like, this is the first time she's, like, gone in there. And she actually called her Tara Thornton and said that they were friends. So I don't think it's quite, like, the book, the show, and it's never going to be. But I was very excited to see that.
That's good.
Or read that, rather.
All right. Are we done? I think we're done. Anything more to think about with this episode?
I don't think so. I think we did it very efficiently.
Good job. All right. Hi, I'm Lozzie. You can find me on Blue Sky at Lozzymandias. You can find my podcast, The Asimov Cast, looking for joy and inspiration in the works of Isaac Asimov, and I might have a Hugo special out soon, which would be fun, at AsimovCast on Blue Sky and Instagram.
I'm Elise, and you can find me on Blue Sky and Letterboxd and Storygraph at Chicken Tendi, that's T-E-N-D-I. You can find my other podcast, Pod Wraiths, a Deep Space Nine rewatch podcast, on Blue Sky and Instagram at Pod Wraiths. That's WRAITHS, and wherever you listen to podcasts.
And thanks very much to DJ Empirical for our theme. You can find the pod on Instagram and Blue Sky at FangBangersPod, and email us your chaotic, horny thoughts on Troopler, please, to FangBangersPod@gmail.com. I'm Lossie, and my blood type is Eric growling in my ear saying, "Who is your master?"
And I'm Elise, and my blood type is, "I got your rug wet."
Bye.
Bye.
Woo. We did it.